Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona. Friday, April 8, a week away from Income Tax Day. Just wanted to remind you of that. As we say, welcome to our weekly get-together. Max Armstrong will be along in a few minutes to talk markets with Rich Allen at Allendale. And, of course, some interesting stories that happened on Wall Street and in the agricultural world this year, this week. Let's take a look, first of all, at Wall Street as we ended this day with the weekly changes. The Dow down 1.2%, the S&P 500 down 1.2%, and the NASDAQ declined 1.3% in today's trade. Oil was a factor in the week-ending trade on Wall Street, a sharp rally in crude oil and energy shares that lifted stocks today. But as you heard, the indices still registered losses for the week, and investors are cautious ahead of earnings season. It's here already. Starting on Monday, Alcoa will lead off, and we'll then be watching the earnings reports from all segments of the economy. Four of the big banks will be reporting next week, and analysts are projecting a third straight quarterly decline in earnings at S&P 500 companies. Crude oil settled more than 6% higher today after data showed lower U.S. stockpiles, driving gains of 2% in the overall S&P energy activity. Wall Street not expecting much in the earnings reports, but right now the market is moving as a direct result of dovish commentary from the Fed and crude's ability to rally. Profits for the S&P 500 companies expected to have declined 7.6% in the first quarter, according to data from Thomson Reuters. Some strategists expect more results than usual to beat extremely low estimates, possibly helping stocks do some higher movement in the short term. And Fed Chair Janet Yellen, late yesterday, said the U.S. economy was on a solid course, while the New York Fed President William Dudley said today a cautious and gradual approach to raising rates was appropriate. The S&P 500's weekly loss, biggest since early February. The index has rallied since mid-February as oil prices rebounded and worries over China sort of backed away. It's kind of interesting to look back over the last two or three years and some of the topics that played in the business world for 4 or 5 years, it seemed like, and then they fade into the distant. Remember Greece. There was a time not too long ago where you'd hardly do a business report without mentioning the Greek economy. And of course, oil is always a topic of conversation. And since Wall Street always needs something to worry about, a lot of worry that's concentrated on the Fed action and how many increases in the Federal Reserve interest rate will we see this year. Some sources saying, no, we'll see probably one. Others saying we'll see two, but we're not seeing much above that. Today, Gap was down 13.8% after the company's disappointing same-store sales for March prompted Citigroup to cut its price target on the stock. And so now we get ready for the earnings report season next week, and that will probably dominate our business news. As we watch the activity besides the beginning of the earnings report, there'll be producer and consumer price data on Wednesday and Thursday, respectively. Retail sales on Wednesday, industrial and manufacturing outputs on Friday, and the federal budget, along with import and export prices on Tuesday. The Labor Department will report producer prices index. They expect a gain of about 0.3% in March. And the price index is expected to hold steady thereafter. Economists are forecasting March retail sales likely went up 0.1%, and manufacturing output likely up 0.1% in March, the same as February. But the banks will dominate the earnings report season once Alcoa kicks it off, and J.P. Morgan Chase & Company will have its first quarter results on Wednesday. J.P. Morgan has already warned it could be a rough first quarter with double-digit declines in investment banking revenues and a $500 million increase in provisions for expected losses on energy loans. Wells Fargo, the biggest U.S. residential mortgage lender and a major lender to the energy industry, expected to report a lower first quarter profit as it also set aside more money for bad oil loans. Friday, Citigroup will report, they think, a jump in first quarter profit as the bank finally puts its legal and repositioning costs behind. And then the fourth bank next week, Bank of America, expected to report an increase in first quarter profit, helped by lower non-interest revenues. So it'll be a busy week for traders on Wall Street to keep an eye on everything coming out. This week, of course, they watch some government reports. Factory data, that's new orders for U.S. factory goods, fell in February. Business spending on capital goods, much weaker than initially thought. As we started the week Monday with the Commerce Department reporting new orders for manufactured goods declined 1.7% thanks to a broad demand in the industrial area that they reported on the new numbers on the manufacturing department. A couple of things happened this week as well on companies that had planned to move overseas, because the government has laid down some pretty strict rules on that. And U.S. drug maker Pfizer and Ireland-based Allergan walked away from their $160 billion merger on Wednesday. And that's a major win for President Barack Obama, who has been pushing to curb deals in which companies move overseas to cut taxes. Pfizer said the decision was driven by new U.S. Treasury rules aimed at such deals called inversions. That merger, had it been completed, would have allowed New York-based Pfizer to cut its tax bill by an estimated $1 billion, with a B, $1 billion annually by domiciling in Ireland, where tax rates are lower. And while the new Treasury rules did not name Pfizer and Allergan, one of the provisions targeted a specific feature of their merger, Allergan's history as a major acquirer of other companies. And of course, inversion rules have unraveled several other mergers as well since being put in place. U.S. drug maker AbbVie abandoned its $55 billion takeover of Ireland-domiciled peer Shire. That happened back in 2014 after the Obama administration cracked down on investors. And you may recall AbbVie had to pay Shire a $1.6 billion breakup fee. So some of those rules are being put into place, and apparently they are having an impact. Taking a look at other stories that played on Wall Street this week, wholesale inventories fell sharply, pointing to weaker growth. And that report out today from the Commerce Department reporting that wholesale inventories dropped 0.5% in February. That, by the way, is the sharpest decline since May of 2013. Analysts had been expecting a 0.1% decline. Inventories play a key component of gross domestic product changes. The component of wholesale inventories that goes into the calculation of gross domestic product wholesale stocks, excluding autos, dropped 0.4% in February. And Sears Holding Corporation announcing that it had acquired $500 million in financing this week as they try to stem the decline in sales and in earnings. They're looking to closing more stores in this new year of 2016. Last year, they closed between Sears and Kmart stores. They closed over 250 of those stores across the nation. A lot of big box stores are having their challenges because of the increase in online shopping. Well, Max Armstrong standing by to talk markets with Rich Nelson of Allendale in McHenry, Illinois, when we continue with the markets sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Joining us this weekend, the Chief Strategist at Allendale Incorporated, Rich Nelson. Rich, as you visit with the growers, they're ready to go, aren't they? They, as soon as the weather permits, will be in the field, will they not?
Oh, there's no doubt. In fact, this past weekend, I took a tour around a good portion of the Midwest, in fact, and saw, I want to say, one out of every three farms had tractors and planters sitting out, ready to go, of course, doing maintenance, getting things ready here. But as a whole, most producers are looking forward to restarting the whole brand new here in front of us. We saw a lot of exciting stuff going on, and like I mentioned, a lot of guys looking forward, of course, to this challenging year ahead of us, but certainly looking forward to brand new year ahead of us.
One thing I really enjoy this time of year and during harvest, too, is producers sharing video clips from the cab. And there was one sent to me on Twitter this week by Delbert Armstrong, Armstrong Farms in Hyde County, North Carolina. He's right next to the Atlantic Ocean. And as he showed that vista around toward the back of his tractor there to see the planter, there was dust. There was dust coming up from that planter, and it looked like he was planting in very good conditions. Indeed, the planting season is underway in those southern and southeast states.
That's right. Aside from a few states, you know, for instance, your Mississippi, your Alabamas, and Louisiana, most other states are looking right now at normal conditions, if not actually maybe a little dry in some areas. So we're going to have a very productive, very fast planting here as we get up into the Nebraska area here, southern Missouri as well. We will have some challenges, though. Like I said, here as far as the southern states, you have a few select ones which will have problems. In addition, you have the Indiana, Ohio areas which have seen above normal precip here in the past few months, and that could provide some minor challenges for those farmers.
You mentioned Alabama and Mississippi. I saw a map the other day that showed how many severe weather warnings have occurred across the United States so far, year to date. And those two states really had been a focus of a lot of weather patterns, severe weather, and as you point out, I guess, quite a bit of moisture.
That's exactly right. In fact, over the past 3 months, these two states, particularly here, these guys have had 6 inches more than normal in the past 3 months. So they are certainly well-suited right now for moisture. The problem is, of course, getting some dry weather and getting some planting done for those guys.
There might have been the need to even replant. I had pointed out a few weeks back, I talked to a farmer at Commodity Classic who was from Louisiana, and he had already planted on his farm north of New Orleans, and then that big deluge of moisture came through, so I would imagine there was some chance to replant there. You mentioned the dry area, and I noticed on the drought monitor map, the geography is becoming a little more impressive there. I mean, when you're talking about Kansas, you're talking about Missouri. You know, it's not a severe drought, but it's abnormally dry.
That's exactly right. In fact, what's been really interesting is this has really just shown up in the past 3 weeks, perhaps, for those areas. And something we weren't expecting here, but as we know, as far as our planting pace concerns, though, anything that's dry is certainly going to be a very productive pace once they do get in the field here. So that's a big question for us right now.
Well, let me ask you about this, about market interest in planting weather. Last year, Eastern Corn Belt, everything you could throw at that crop was thrown at it in terms of bad planting weather. Guess what? We wound up with good production after all was said and done. Now, the individual farmers, of course, in that region, it was a struggle, by all means. It was not a fun planting season. They don't want to relive that again. But isn't the market more likely to start assuming, wait a minute, we're going to get this crop in. We're going to have a good-sized crop. We've seen in the past that planting seasons can go remarkably well, even though there's a lot of hand-wringing over it.
That's actually a great point. In the past 10 years, we've seen quite a few instances of these late planting years where magically, somehow, the acreage does actually get in here. So we know that the market will have some quick little jiggles in the market, some little rallies here, maybe in the next two or three months here. But as a whole, generally what they intend to plant has been put in the field here in the past few years.
That planting intentions report pretty much snuffed out the opportunity for any kind of significant planting rally, did it not?
And that's a great point. We probably won't see a major rally overall in grains as we go into spring. We may see some changes in the mix, though, as far as pricing. Perhaps you can argue maybe some corn acres will switch over to beans, which is the current trade talk, maybe 1 to 2 million acres. But that probably won't cause any major reason to rally yet. The real issues ahead of us are going to be yield. Before this actual planting report, we had corn maybe offering a $40 premium over soybean revenue here, and I'm going to say it's a $40 premium. That's going to be less loss, keep in mind, as far as that goes. But now we've probably changed that to where now it's probably even, if not actually slightly favoring soybeans by a very small amount here. So we probably have influenced a minor change in acreage, no doubt here.
You talk to the input suppliers and they say, in a quiet personal conversation, they'll say, yeah, producers are trying to find ways to cut back by all means. How significant is that in terms of the final yield? In other words, is there enough trimming back of various crop inputs, fertilizers, fertilizer enhancers, yield enhancers, that it could make any kind of a significant difference in the ultimate yield? I mean, we hear some people throwing out some big corn yield numbers out there if the weather cooperates. I know there was one highly regarded Iowa meteorologist, climatologist who threw out 173 bushel corn yield out there the other day.
I'm probably going to take a little different tack than that viewpoint here. Now, in terms of yield, the issues in front of us as far as inputs and as far as seed and seed quality and seed varieties for the nationwide interest, which is what we're looking at here, I have personally never been able to find any correlation between changes in seed mix or changes in inputs used on a year-to-year basis. The issues which really determine nationwide yield are temperatures and moisture at the exact particular times here. So as far as ourselves, we're using more of a reasonable trend line, 165 right now, and that's if we get average weather. Now keep in mind, nobody's calling for average weather this summer. You have NOAA calling for above normal temps, or the private guys who are calling for slightly below normal precip in the Western Corn Belt.
Well, how long do you think it'll be before we really see some excitement in weather?
Our kind of plan right now overall is that, you know, we will have some minor problems with planting. We may have some rallies here or there, but bottom line, we're probably going to go back down in terms of pricing once we get this crop planted down in that May, early June time frame, right back to where we started from in this corn market, this 350 range, soybean side of things here, maybe this 870 range or so. But our big issues in terms of the first part of your question, when does the rally get started? Traditionally, it's been the second or third week of June for these type of summer rallies. So on that aspect, I wouldn't look for a rally right now, but maybe later on, yes.
How's the demand front looking at the moment? We know it has not been terribly impressive, but typically low prices encourage additional buying. What's happening there?
We actually have seen some changes. You know, according to this last grain stocks report, once you compute out, you take out the exports, you take out the corn for ethanol, we actually saw a very good feed residual use. In fact, 7% more than last year at the exact same time. So low prices are garnering some interest, and we certainly would suggest for this this next report we have lined up next week from USDA, the monthly supply demand, that will be addressed. Now, while we're seeing some good domestic demand, our questions right now as far as corn go are exports. We're still suggesting USDA may need to lower that here on the coming report.
Feed and residual use. Talk a little bit about that category. Is that one that's a little bit of a struggle to get your arms around sometimes?
It is always a struggle for any analyst and anyone looking at the market to guess here. As far as the big picture issues on feed residual, keep in mind there's no weekly reports, unlike exports. There's no monthly reports, unlike we get in for corn for ethanol or, for instance, soybeans for crush. So it's a big black hole category that we really can't argue with USDA on because it's just a tough one for us to figure out. So in general, number one, we've got more birds, more hogs, and a little more cattle. Number two, we have cheap corn. That'll be slightly offset by the higher feed availability of other minor grains and DDGs.
It's always great to have you as a guest here, sir. Come back soon. We'll talk to you sometime, maybe during more exciting days of the growing season, one can hope.
Sounds great. Look forward to it.
Rich Nelson, Allendale Incorporated.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
There are a lot of farmers, I'm guessing, that are waiting for the wintry weather to move out of the corn, soybean, and wheat area. We've certainly seen that kind of weather so far in April, and there are a lot of nervous traders and anxious farmers to finally get into the field if Mother Nature will finally approve and agree. And every year, I think we have a period or two, sometime in the spring planting season, where people start saying, we are not going to get as many acres planted as we thought. And boy, we're getting nervous, and we probably won't get the bushels that we thought, because weather just isn't allowing us to do anything. But you know what? We always get the crop planted. Some farmers don't get as much of the crop planted as they would like some years, but generally, with today's equipment especially, we tend to get everything done a lot faster than we did 40 or 50 years ago. But once we get it in the ground and once we get it harvested, then we've got to be concerned about getting it sold. And that's why these trade agreements that a lot of the presidential candidates are saying they will cancel and put to an end would be bad news for the agricultural economy in this country. But I think Mr. Kasich from Ohio is the only candidate who understands the importance of trade to farms and ranches and who understands the importance of NAFTA, the trading agreement put in place back in the 90s. And of course, now there's concern about the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership that involves 12 countries that circle the Pacific Ocean, and they do nearly half of the world's agricultural trade. But then don't forget the European Union is an important market, and there are trade agreements that are still being discussed there. Because of that, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack traveled to Berlin this past week and said the United States and the European Union need to make serious progress on a sweeping U.S.-European free trade deal before President Obama leaves office. The secretary said in a press conference with the German agriculture minister Christian Schmidt, Secretary Vilsack said, I would not want to put a hard and fast deadline on this as we want to do it right, but I do think it's important for us to make serious and significant progress on this over the next 6 to 9 months. So we do have trade agreements that are being discussed on both sides, the Atlantic and the Pacific. Today, the Food and Drug Administration moved to revoke approval of a drug used to treat certain conditions in pigs because it could leave a cancerous residue that may affect human health. The drug, Carbadox, made by the Phibro Animal Health Company based in Teaneck, New Jersey, used to control swine dysentery and bacterial enteritis, the agency reported. It has also been used to promote weight gain in pigs. But then the FDA goes on to say, potential cancer risks are based on an assumed lifetime of consuming pork liver or other pork products containing Carbadox residues, adding that it is not recommending that people change their food choices while it works to remove the drug from the market. The FDA went on to say, pork is a good source of protein. However, protein can also be found in other meat, poultry, seafood, beans and peas, eggs, processed soy products, nuts and seeds. pork liver used to make liverwurst, hot dogs, lunch meat, and some types of sausage. And officials for Phibro, which generates annual sales of more than $650 million and employs more than 1,100 people worldwide, not immediately available for comment. But Dave Warner, spokesman for the Pork Producers Council, which represents the pork industry, said it is reviewing the implications of the FDA move, but will let the Animal Health Institute, which represents animal health drug companies, let them take the lead. So something else for people in the livestock industry to be concerned about with that announcement today from the Food and Drug Administration. One other item that I do want to mention, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. People like Max Armstrong and me are members of that and have been for our entire broadcasting career. And I just want to make note of the fact that the NAFB Foundation, that has been investing in the future of farm broadcasting since 1975, providing financial support for college students pursuing careers in agricultural communications, well, the foundation this year will be awarding five $5,000 scholarships. And in addition to the scholarship, they will also provide an expense-paid trip to the NAFB convention in Kansas City in November, and online applications will be accepted through June 6. And simply go to NAFB.com. But for those of you wondering how you're going to pay for college education in agriculture, and in this case, agricultural communications, pretty good chunk of money in that scholarship program that is being offered. As we take a look at where we're going to start trading next Monday in the commodity world, well, let's take a look at the grain market, because today, pretty good day for the soybean market. And after gaining 12 and a quarter cents, the May soybean contract will start Monday at $9.16 and three quarter cents a bushel. New crop November soybeans gained 11 cents today. We'll start the week with the price of $9.30 and three quarter cents a bushel. May corn, hardly any movement there today. It'll start Monday at 3.62 and a quarter after gaining just a quarter of a cent today. New crop December corn also up a quarter of a cent, and it will start Monday at $3.75. May wheat will start next week at $4.60 and a quarter cents after gaining 3 cents today. And the July wheat contract will start at 4.66 and three quarters after gaining 2 cents today. In the livestock world, we saw a little bit of a rebound in the cattle market, but boy, it has been a tough time for cattle producers. Particularly, I met here in Arizona and had lunch with several feeder cattle producers, and they all said that they're not looking for any big profit in the calves that are being born and will be going into the feeder cattle market in 500 or 600 pounds. So April live cattle today ended up $1.95 at $134.37. June cattle closed $1.80 higher, and they'll start trading on Monday at $124.02. And both contracts settled above their respective 100-day moving average of 133.63. Futures discounts this week to this week's $132 to $136 market cash cattle trade in the plains. That attracted some more buyers and traders into the market, because that $132 to $136 compared to $133 and $136 per hundredweight last week. And in the cash, or I should say in the hog live hog futures trade this week at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, we did see the near-term cash price uncertainty and soft wholesale pork values this morning having an impact on the pork market. So That's our time for this week. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.